Ask the Dentist on Talk About. Brought to you in association with Bridge Place Dental Practice Tralee. Your smile, our expertise.
Now a warm welcome to Colm O'Loughlin from Bridge Place Dental here in Tralee. Welcome, Colm.
Thanks very much, Deirdre. Good to be back.
Good to see you. We've lots of questions for you, but I just want to remind people to send another one in on 083 300 3300 if you have any dental problems at the moment. And we'll start with this one from, and this is a good one actually to start with, Colm. This is from a listener in Tralee who says, Deirdre, the next time Colm is in, because I got this a few days ago, will you please ask him to talk a little bit about his career in dentistry? I have a 17-year-old son who's very keen to become a dentist and would like to know the ins and outs of it.
Okay, yeah, that's a very fair question. I suppose dentistry is a bit of a mystery to a lot of people. And the first thing I'd say is if you have any designs on doing it, speak to a dentist or maybe your own family dentist or another local dentist and ask them if you can do some work experience just to see the goings on. We've certainly done that plenty of times and people are often surprised both pleasantly and unpleasantly as to what it looks like in terms of the doing of it. It certainly probably runs differently to what a lot of people expect from the outside perspective. But anyway, back to the question. It's helpful if you are reasonably academic.
It's high points, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, the points in Ireland are high for not just because the course is academic, but because the demand is demand versus availability issues, you know, so there's not very many training places in Ireland, but it is a demanding course. There's a lot of material in it. It's a 5-year course, and while you do share normal university holidays in the first 2 years, you'll also get much shorter summer holidays in the final 3 years. So 6 weeks as against the usual three and a bit months. Because there's so much to get through, both academically and in terms of practical experience. So that's the first thing. It isn't going to be a joyride. You will have 36 hours of scheduled lectures, tutorials, and practicals at least every week. So it'll be more like a full-time job than some courses that can involve a lot of self-directed learning and maybe not have so many scheduled hours. And they're checking. They will check. you, if you're not there, they'll notice.
Okay.
So you do need to turn up.
Not much partying for you, so.
It sort of keeps us somewhat in check anyway. So that's the first thing. The next thing then is the actual job itself. You know, you need to have a reasonably diverse skill set. Communication is important. You need to be, if you're not already a people person, willing to become one. You know, if you're shy and introverted, then, you know,
You'll have to come out of your shell.
Community dentistry may not be for you, but of course there are other directions you can go in. So you don't have to be a dentist working directly with patients in the public. There are academic research areas you can go into. And many do, so there is a diverse kind of a range of outlets there, both in academia and practically. And then when it comes to doing the job itself, you know, it is very hands on. You do need to have good practical skills, good problem solving skills, an interest in technology. And this might not have been the case in the past, but I mean, I'm a terrible geek, really. I'm just after ordering a new 3D printer because it can finally do certain jobs that 3D printers up to this date weren't able to do. And I got my first 3D printer about 8 years ago, and we've used CNC machines, and we use scanners and 3D design software, and guided direction of surgery using 3D x-rays and pretty cool stuff. So if you like design and sort of manipulating things and then sort of trying to transmit these concepts into reality, that's what modern dentistry looks like. It's not pulling teeth. There is pulling teeth, mind you, that is still there, but there's a whole other facet to it. So modern people don't have the bad teeth that people in the past used to have. So we can now design smiles. We can, it's not about being a cosmetic dentist. I'm not a cosmetic dentist, but form follows function. If you're doing the thing to recreate nature, that is cosmetic. But our ability to actually correct problems and regenerate things and recreate things now for people, it's an exciting space technology wise. It's a very dynamic, technology driven, science based subject. It's not static. So, you know, if that sounds good to someone, then I think they'd enjoy dentistry.
I'm just wondering, now you mentioned there already that you need people skills, you need to be good with people. I would imagine, rightly or wrongly, that you'd need to be a fairly calm person, because so many people have a fear and a phobia about anyone going anywhere near their mouth with, yeah, with, you know,
you're, that comes equipment with experience too, I suppose. You know, as I say to people sometimes, you know, I wasn't born a dentist. Although my father was a dentist, he wasn't born a dentist either. You know, you do develop calm with experience, with knowledge and training. But I was reading an interesting article recently, actually, that showed a correlation between the calmness level of the provider of treatment and the pain perception of patients. So for a given treatment, yeah, and so your point is well made, for a given treatment, if the dentist is calm delivering it, the patient will perceive less discomfort than if the dentist is not calm or is anxious themselves or is not transmitting the correct energy. So yeah, definitely it is going to help you have a better day. And the other thing that it's easy to forget is that, like, you know, we're not working on inanimate objects. There's an energy in the room. So if the patients are unhappy, you're going to be unhappy, you know?
Yeah.
So it's quite an interesting virtuous circle. So it's in everyone's interest to sort of try and rub along well, and for you to have, yeah, a reasonable degree of calmness and ability to kind of internalize discomfort of your own, so that the patient can have a, you know, it is still a caring profession.
Yeah, I wonder too. I often wonder, because every month when you're here and you're coming into me for years now at this stage, there's always a question from somebody who says, I haven't been to the dentist in 10, 20 years, longer, I'm afraid to go. Or they're talking about their dad whose, yeah, teeth are rotten and he won't go. Like, where does all this phobia come from? Like, does it go back to a day when, like, you know, a long time ago when a dentist came round to the school and you know, yeah, people have bad memories of what he did to them?
I can't sort of give you a categorically correct answer to that. I can only give you my own, I suppose, anecdotal experience of it. So I think the first category of problem is childhood experience. And we know that if a child gets a fright, whether it's from a dog, you know, we find adults that are terrified of dogs. And when you get into it, then you discover that they were nearly attacked by a dog, or they were frightened out of their wits by a dog when they were small. Same with cuts on the fingers, or same with spiders, or you name it. There's often a childhood trauma, because children are very vulnerable and very easily influenced. So one of the problems we have, and why prevention is so important, is that if children do develop dental problems, you know, they can't accept that what's happening to them is in their interest. It feels like a violation, and that lives with them for the rest of their lives. So that's the first one, I think. And the second thing then is that, you know, and I'm very accepting of the fact that a lot of what we do, it's very close to home. I mean, if you had an ingrown toenail, it's not terribly pleasant having that dealt with either, but it's a good distance from
your
HQ,
head.
You know, yeah. But your teeth are in headquarters. It's very close to home. That's a big deal to hand over your trust to a stranger, whatever qualifications they profess to have, and allow them carte blanche to go in and fix this thing, you know. So it's entirely understandable. And then, you know, different people have different degrees of tolerance and anxiety management. And so what one person is, you know, shrugs off, another person could be terrified by. And we see that from day to day. So there's a huge variation of human experience. But the fundamentals of it are, I suppose, that it's a surgical process. And, you know, sometimes it's made light of, you know, taking out a tooth. It's a surgical process. It is a surgery. We are removing a piece of someone's body. And that's not to be taken lightly. And, yeah, people are nervous about that. And I kind of can't blame them. But if a filling is a surgical procedure, you're still drilling, carrying out an interaction with a living part of their anatomy. And, you know, the last thing then is nerve endings, more nerve endings in teeth than anywhere else. Nowhere else in your body has as many nerve endings as your teeth. So with the best will in the world, there can be some discomfort involved in the treatment, you know, whether it's the injection to numb it in the first place. Sometimes the injection doesn't work the first time. Sometimes the person is in dire straits pain-wise when they arrive in the door. So these are, you know, when you put all of that into the pot, that's a lot of possible tripwires there for people not enjoying what's happening. So that's the other side of it, that's why you do need to have good training and have good people skills, and I suppose a willingness to work with people.
Yeah.
You know, they're not inanimate.
I suppose you do give off a vibe of being a very calm person, you know. I don't know whether that's something you learn or is it just
that's only for show.
You're like the swan, are you?
Paddling madly underneath. No, yeah. When I'm doing my job, I probably am pretty calm. But you know, that's anybody who knows me well might not see that as being the full time behavior. But you know, you have to. It's just you have a responsibility to do it. So you will learn to do that.
And do dentists, when you're in dental college, is there a module on how to be calm or how to calm down nervous patients?
This is a huge kind of area of debate. No, there's not. Which is, so absolutely.
Wow. That's not the answer I expected.
No, but there you go. So that's what it was. That is a massive issue. You know, there's often a debate about what should be taught in the curriculum. You know, there should be more business coaching, sometimes people say. And hi, hum and haw on that one, because, okay, while an awful lot of dentistry is delivered in the private sector, you know, if you want to be an accountant or you want to be a carpenter, there isn't business coaching for that either. That's up to you to work that out. But I think some psychology and, yeah, both in terms of your own management of yourself as well as management of others, I think that's sorely missing. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I think that gave a fairly comprehensive answer to the lady in Tralee whose son is interested in dentistry. We'll move on, and we have a question from someone who doesn't leave a name, and that's fine. Says, Deirdre, will you ask Colin, please, if nicotine pouches are harmful to your gums/teeth if taken in the long term?
Is the answer to that one.
Are there better alternatives if you're trying to stop smoking?
Yeah, stop smoking. And use proper pharmaceutically approved products. Speak to your GP. Do not use those nicotine pouches. Those nicotine pouches are 100% designed, and I really get vexed about this. I get quite cross about those and vaping. There's a total money-making angle there. I had another young person into me today, and I'm getting sick of it now, actually, at the way they're being abused. And she's never smoked, and she's vaping like mad, and her gums are destroyed from it. And so this whole vaping and nicotine pouch thing is nothing more than a form of legalised drug trade, and I defy anybody to argue that it isn't, that it's anything else. And it's masquerading as a sort of a safe way of consuming these substances. It's not. The only way, if you're determined to get off smoking, speak to your GP, get the government has a lot of assistance out there, programs to help people, and then you have your various nicotine gums and patches and things like that that are sold through your pharmacy, and they're not sold through the pharmacy because somebody is trying to kind of make it difficult or expensive for you. It's because they've had to go through somewhat rigorous testing for safety about how they release. But those nicotine pouches that people put inside their lips, they just literally release a bomb of nicotine into the system. And that bomb of nicotine just creates a massive high of this drug. It's not a slow release. It's not a controlled release. And it promotes addiction. It promotes nicotine addiction. And the same with vaping.
And you were saying that vaping, yeah, you're seeing kids with gum damage because of vaping.
Absolutely. I mean, there are toxic chemicals in these vapes, and they're passing, the port of entry is the mouth. And we're seeing really enraged, inflamed gums, gingivitis. You know, this is going to cause big problems for people in the line. Where the data sits on the safety of vaping versus smoking, I don't know who's going to come out worse in the long run. It's still being worked on, but as far as I'm concerned, after doing this job for 25 years and looking in a lot of mouths over those 25 years, the jury is in for me anyway, that what's happening is not good. Not good, no.
Okay, well, that speaks for itself. We're going to take a quick break. We've some questions for Colm. If you'd like to ask him anything, Colm O'Loughlin from Bridge Place Dental here in Tralee, our dentist on the show, 083 300 3300, to text or WhatsApp. You can also call us on 066 712 3666.
Ask the Dentist on Talk About, brought to you in association with Bridge Place Dental Practice Tralee. Your smile, our expertise.
Now, Colm, here's one that I don't think we've had before. A lady in her 70s with vertigo. She says her problem is she's unable to lie back in the dentist's chair. She can only sit upright. Can you offer any solution?
not easily. Not easily is the truth of it. I mean, if you go back in time, you'll find dentists using dentistry to work on patients that are upright. So it can be done. The only, you know, especially for lower teeth, if some work needed to be done. But I suppose it starts with a checkup and figure out what's going on. I mean, if you meet an obliging, probably younger dentist who will be more nimble and whose spine hasn't started to suffer as much as some of us older people's spines have, they may be able to work. But it can be difficult to work on upper teeth on an upright patient. Now, maybe she'll be able to lie back even a few degrees, even at 45 degrees. Would be sufficient for most dentists to be able to carry out treatment if it was needed. So I don't see that as being an absolute limitation. It's a complication, and it's more the dentist's problem than hers, but someone should be able to work around it, I would think.
Yeah, and if she just talks to them in advance,
exactly.
And tells them
explains her dilemma and usually a solution will be found. I've certainly done it in the past anyway. Like it's not unusual for elderly people to have balance issues, and we're even in our basic training years and years ago, we were always told if you have an older patient, you know, and they have been back in the chair, sit them up slowly because they may have vertigo, so you know, bring them up in stages, blood pressure issues as well. And that's the other thing with some vertigo sufferers, sometimes it's just a case of managing the chair movements in small steps, and they can tolerate a reasonable amount of movement that way. So it's all about dialogue again, like what I said earlier about people who are nervous of going to the dentist. We have to actually at some point look at each other in the eye and say, look, we're in this together and we're trying to help, so let's try and work together on it.
Now, a lady in her late 70s would like to know roughly how much would one implant in a lower set of teeth cost. She says her teeth are her own, but she has one loose tooth. Now, I know you're always reluctant to give a price, because it's hard to say.
Well, yeah, because there's so many variables in it. Both some dental practices will have different fees as well, and I don't want to adversely affect anyone else's delivery. In my own practice, you would expect a single tooth finished as a dental implant to be somewhere in the region of €3,000.
Yeah.
And then tax relief and so on will apply.
Okay, very good. One person says, this goes back to the discussion we had about nervousness and people's reluctance to go to the dentist in the first place. And one listener says, nobody likes going to the dentist because the noise of the drill is bad. Is that still the case? I haven't had a filling in a long, long time.
Here it is. I mean, yeah, I suppose the problem, right, is as follows, that your bone is an amazing sound conductor. Like I use modern electric drills, and so they're not powered exclusively by the air that gives you that real classic whine noise, but it is still a drill and it's running at a high speed. And then it touches your tooth, which is a kind of a bony substance, which is connected to your jaw, which is bone, which is connected to your ear, which is bone. And so your jawbone is this amazing tuning fork conducting sound right into your eardrum, which makes it sound 10 times louder to the patient than it is in reality. So it's very difficult to get away from this idea that sound is a conduction of vibrations, and the vibrations are being carried out on your jaw, which is attached to your ear. So it's an almost insurmountable problem, I'm afraid, due to the actual arrangement of human anatomy. Sound cancelling headphones can help, and I do advise anybody having a longer procedure to bring them with them, even if it's just basic earphones, anything at all, just to dilute it and counteract it a bit. But there's always going to be a bit of an issue with sound conduction.
This next listener says, I have three lower teeth dentures for years. Would it be possible to get dental implants?
I cannot answer that question because there's so many variables. And maybe there's not enough gum, maybe there is. Sometimes gums shrink away after teeth are lost, and you can't actually put the implant back easily. There may be other ways of doing it as well. It doesn't have to be an implant. Sometimes there's other ways of putting teeth back in. And there may be medical issues. Somebody may be on certain medications or have certain medical conditions, or be heavy smokers or vapors, and those can also be limiting factors. So it's kind of, there's an interview with the patient, there's a medical history, and then there's the actual clinical situation of what's in their mouth. And so all three of those little areas have to work, and then if we're okay on all three, then it is possible. but impossible to say that on the radio, I'm afraid. But on the balance of probabilities, most people can have implants. The patients that we're a little bit more wary of, a little bit more careful with, are diabetics and smokers. Because those are two things that directly impact the body's healing ability. So it's not that the implants don't work, it's that the body doesn't work.
Okay. We'll just take one more. This is from a listener who says, I've noticed my teeth have become quite discoloured and yellowish looking in the last while. Could Colm talk me through the whole process of teeth whitening, because I genuinely don't know anything about it?
Sure. I mean, I would absolutely say that it's the most bang for your buck you can get in terms of improving your teeth. So you'll even see people whose teeth are not terribly straight, but if they're white, they still look great. So I'd say to anybody who's unhappy with the appearance of their teeth, look at whitening first. It's non-invasive. I get these things out first because I've been asked loads of times, you know, but does it not melt the enamel on my teeth? And it does kind of fill me with dread, really, that somebody's coming to a regulated professional who's thinks he's doing healthcare, and they're asking me if I'm going to sell them something that's going to melt their teeth. But anyway, no, so tooth whitening doesn't damage your teeth. It doesn't cause any harm whatsoever to your teeth. But the first thing you want to do is get rid of any stain that's on the outside of your teeth. So there's kind of two types of stain. There's stain that's on your teeth and stain that's in your teeth. So you want to get off what's on them first, and that's seeing your dentist or hygienist for a thorough cleaning. And then you start your whitening. And the whitening can be applied either by night or by daytime, because there's different kinds of gels to suit different schedules and situations, and we will go through that with the person. Some people will not want something in their mouth while they're asleep at night. Others will be happy to do it because it's more convenient. So that's the first thing. So a little tray is made that's custom fit to your teeth, and then the gel is applied into that, and it's fitted over your teeth, and it soaks into your teeth and incrementally whitens them. It's a peroxide. So like peroxide is basically a chemical that releases oxygen bubbles, and the oxygen bubbles react with stains and make the stains disappear. So that's what it's doing. And it does that incrementally over time. There's been a lot of questions over the years about one-stop shop whitening. And I'll just give you the short answer to that, which is that it's not as effective as people would like it to be. And I certainly love to be able to just click my fingers and make someone's teeth white, but it's not as straightforward as that. So the home whitening, where you apply the gel incrementally, seems to offer the best balance of comfort and results, and it's stable. The results are stable over time. So I would say tooth whitening, if you want your teeth to look nicer, go for it. You'll probably need to do a cleaning first, and then the whitening is given, and it's custom made and explained to you how it works. And the whole process will vary in time then, depending on A, your desired endpoint, and B, your starting point. So obviously teeth that are very, very brown, going to take longer. Teeth that are not too bad, take less time.
Okay.
And, you know, that stands to reason for most people, I think.
Great stuff. Well, listen, we're going to leave it there for now, Colm, but people can find you at Bridge Place Dental. Are you still taking on some new patients?
Yes, we are indeed. Yes, absolutely.
If anyone wants to give a shout, give a shout. That's Bridge Place Dental, Bridge Place, Tralee, County Kerry. Give them a shout, and you'll find Colm there and his colleagues, of course, the team at Bridge Place. Colm, we'll see you next month. All going well. Happy Easter.
And many happy returns to everyone as well, all your listeners.
Thank you. We'll have a quick break.